Marvel Star Wars, Issue 21, Shadow of a Dark Lord. Hello everyone, it's been a while. Remember back in February when I said I'd knock this whole six-part Wheel series out in a week? Yeah, that didn't pan out. Laptop problems, work issues, I mean listen, I've been working long hours at work. In fact, just this last Friday, I'm recording this on a Sunday, I did 17 straight hours, so yes, lots of things have been falling behind, including this blog. A lot of people have been wondering where I was, and I've been getting lots of love from other Star Wars fan sites and podcasts. Before we get into the main thing of this issue, I'd like to take care of some business by thanking some of them. So yes, this is going to be a longer than usual episode. Scott Gardner and Chris Honeywell from Two True Freaks have been showing me lots of love in their Star Wars Monthly Mondays. They've mentioned me a few times, and if you haven't heard me talk about it before, Star Wars Monthly Mondays, they have the same format that I do sometimes. They talk about more stuff than I do, though, because I'm exclusively doing the Marvel stuff right now. They also do Clone Wars and EU novels and other discussions, but in their Star Wars Monthly Mondays, they talk about three or four Marvel issues at a time. It's really, really great stuff, and I actually just guest starred with them on an episode where we discussed the Splinter of the Mind's Eye book. That was a really fun episode to do, and if you need some more Star Wars fix, please check out the Splinter of the Mind's Eye episode of Two True Freaks. Jay and Tom from the Unknown Regions have always been supporters of mine. They've been really, really great, and they do a quality show discussing the Star Wars EU. I am ashamed to say that I'm a little behind on their shows, but the fun thing about being behind is that I get to catch up, and it's really fun to catch up because their show is a great quality show. Nathan P. Butler, who this would be an hour-long show if I named all the projects that he does, but he's from Star Wars Fanworks. It's a site where Star Wars fan audio productions kind of have a home. He made me part of Star Wars Fanworks. He's a really, really great guy, and he's been a supporter as well. A good podcast of his is the EU Review. That deserves special mention. This guy is a walking Star Wars encyclopedia. John White from Star Wars Age 9, that's a blog where he shows pictures of the adaptation that he drew as a kid as he's posting them day by day. That's been really great. It's actually recently been revamped, so I would check that out. Andrew Gilbertson, who's also a part of Star Wars Fanworks, he has a fan audio drama based on the Marvel series called Star Wars Marvels. I was also emailing Jimmy Mack from the Force Cast, and he surprised me when he mentioned that he was aware of my show and that he was a fan of it, so kudos to Jimmy Mack and the Force Cast gang. I'm sure I'm forgetting some, and I'm sorry, but on to the issue. Our usual suspects are back this time around. We have Archie Goodwin as the writer slash editor, and Carmen Infantino with assistance from Gene Day doing the art. Not much new to say about them. One important thing to note is that this issue is the first reappearance of Vader, aside from flashbacks and montages, since issue 6, when he and his TIE fighter went spinning out of control, so welcome back, Vader. That is a very, very big deal. By the way, the Marvel series are also being reprinted in omnibuses, which came out as of this recording. I want to say last week I was able to pick it up on the first day. I've been putting this image all over different websites of the web of a little kid who I know wearing a clone trooper helmet engrossed in the Star Wars A Long Time Ago Omnibus Issue 1. Looked at it, really, really great stuff. You got the first, I believe, 26 issues of the Marvel series in there. Recolored, but they keep most of the same stuff. I did some checking. It looks like it's the same thing as the big A Long Time Ago trades from a few years ago, but I haven't compared the differences. For example, all the Stan Lee Presents stuff have been changed to Lucasfilm Presents. I'm assuming that it's for copyright reasons. But Uncle Owen, and when the homestead is burning down, is still Uncle Ben. They didn't go back and fix all the mistakes. Bail Organa is still Bail Antilles. Some of the Dark Horse reprints fixed some of the mistakes. This one, it kept a lot of them. I like these things being presented in their original form. The cover does correct the color of Ben and Luke's lightsabers and Darth Vader's helmet, but on the inside of the book there's another cover gallery where the cover is in the original colors with the green Vader and the red lightsabers. So awesome stuff. Please pick it up. So let's get cracking. Leia continues her escape from Greyshade's tower. We get some great Leia trickery as she fakes an injury to surprise the lone guard who is blocking the lift. She decides to head to the casino since it was the original meeting spot Han had set up before things went wrong. She then recaps the story for those of us who are just joining us. We do join Luke, though, who is still strapped to the examining table of the medical facility. And yes, those of you who remember the last podcast that I did will say, wasn't it established last issue that he escaped? Well, this scene takes place before that, as the narration captions say. He is still in the same trance that he fell into during part one of the story. It's a really trippy scene of what's going on inside his mind. He's running in the stars while Ben is encouraging him to fight Darth Vader, which is very un-Jedi-like of him. We get Luke, full with a long, long hair, tackling Darth Vader and his lightsaber as Ben says, "A weapon is only a tool, Luke, an extension of your inner will. True power must come from the depths of the soul. You can do it, Luke. Strike. Fight back with all the power within you." Yes! With all the power within me! As an epic struggle begins in his mind of the Tatooine farm lad turned star warrior, his shock-stilled body suddenly trembles and begins its own fight. As we see the Luke in his underwear strapped to the examining table, "I can do it, I can!" This fight is against the trance that binds him, against the automatically administered drugs that are sending him even deeper into a trance, and mechanized restraints calculated for a person seemingly not capable of such resistance, and definitely not up to this kind of battle. And we see Luke rip open the restraints and bust out of the table. Luke's hair, by the way, has gone really, really long, as I mentioned when I was describing this image, which you can see at StarWarsMarvel.com. His muscles are also much larger here, although this is the most naked we've seen him since Infantino came onto the book. The transformation has been slow, but because he's pretty much naked, it's a lot more noticeable here. No more is he this gawky, youthful farm boy. In his place, we have action hero Skywalker, looking kind of like Conan the Barbarian. That was a criticism of some of these early Marvel issues, is that Luke, well, didn't look like Luke. They made him too much of an action hero-y. Luke now seems to be existing in two planes at once. He's still battling Darth in his dream world, but also escaping and gathering his stuff, lightsaber included, in the real world. Leia catches up with him as he finally defeats Darth Vader in the dream world and snaps out of it. Turns out he defeated quite a few guards while he's sleepwalking, as evidenced by the dead bodies that Leia points out to him. Whoops. "What is this place?" Luke asks Leia. "How did we get here? The last I recall, I was doing a meditation, letting my mind drift free when..." "What, Luke?" "I touched someone else's mind, only for an instant, just in passing. It was twisted, evil, and strong, princess. So strong it made me want to hide, to crawl inside myself and never come out. Worst of all, that contact makes certain what we could only suspect up till now. Darth Vader is alive. Alive and searching for us." Well, I suppose that the Rebels weren't sure if Darth Vader survived the epic Death Star battle. For 1979's continuity, that makes sense, but I wonder how this all fits into the established EU timeline of the year 2010. R2 and 3PO have also caught up with the Princess and Luke at this point in the story, and by gosh, in the last panel we have a really, really badly drawn R2. I'm not too crazy about 3PO's head either. Infantino! In fact, I was just listening the other day to the podcast, the latest Star Wars Monthly Mondays from Scott and Chris, and they were talking the Shag from Michael Bailey's views from the Longbox podcast, and they all pretty much seem to agree that Infantino's biggest problem with drawing was the droids. And as I was listening to that podcast, I was nodding, going, amen. Well, speaking of Darth, we do see him again, and another Two True Freaks shout-out, actually. We see him in the backdrop of a beautiful planet. In fact, he's standing right in front of a bunch of big, pretty flowers. Very, very contrasting. And he's holding up, there's a lot of dead rebels on the ground, and he's holding up one of them with his lightsaber lit and stormtroopers behind him and the stuff that's burning in their wake. Interlude, the air of the mid-systems planet Ultar is thick, cloyingly heavy with the overripe scent of giant blossoms grown here for harvest. Mix this with an arid haze of spent laser bolts, the telling stench of death, and even veteran stormtroopers may feel revulsion. Even veteran stormtroopers who have long followed in the wake of, big letters now, Darth Vader, Lord of the Sith, dead. An entire Rebel information retrieval unit wiped out by somebody who found this outpost ahead of us. Here in the hut, Lord Vader. Here's one who'll pull through. So yes, as you can see by that page, well, or hear it, unless you're going to the blog, guys, at StarWarsMarvel.com, Darth Vader is back, and Infantino does draw him quite well. It would have been very, very hard to have Vader return against a backdrop of beautiful flowers and pretty stuff, but by gosh, Infantino did make it work. Vader's return wouldn't be complete without a torture scene, as Vader interrogates the Rebel. It was just one man, rather half-man, half-machine. He's a Borg, cyborg, calls himself Valens. As the footnote says, we met him in Star Wars issue 16. A bounty hunter, searching for the group that's been aiding Princess Leia. Especially a boy. A boy with two droids. He didn't have information he needed, but someone tried to draw on him, and this happened. Now please help ease the pain.
With nearly supernatural swiftness, a lightsaber flashes. Ease the pain, Rebel? I'll end it entirely!
As Vader uses his lightsaber to kill the guy he's torturing. Interesting. I seem to have a rival, perhaps even a formidable one. Communications from the ship, Lord Vader. Well, before we go on to those communications, my pro for this is Vader ending the Rebel's pain. That was a cool sequence. My con is, sorry guys, I'm not a Valens fan. Valens, the half-Borg guy. Oh, it's so deep. He hates robots, but he's half-robot. Ooh. There's this whole obsession with robot hate in these early Marvel issues, and we keep on getting this whole Aesop's fable at the end that, wow, robots and humans can be friends. It's been on issue 21 now, and it's already a tired premises. We get to find out that Vader had felt Luke's presence, but doesn't know who it belonged to during Luke's trance, and has been tracking him ever since. I should really just summarize the scene instead of reading out loud every other panel, but this is so much good stuff, as we see when Vader's communicating with his ship here. The guy's telling Vader, well, you're the expert on metaphysics, the Force and all that, but it sounds a bit vague to be tying up my technicians, dear boy.
Wormus, I haven't been a boy for some years, and no one has ever rated me as dear. If there is another mind in the galaxy still capable of evoking the Force, no matter how weakly, it poses nearly as great a threat to the Empire as wimpish incompetence like you. I want the nearest destination a ship passing us in these coordinates might have headed for. We'll start with that. This world may have proved a dead end, but the trip here may have put us on something greater.
And shortly, TIE fighters thunder upwards into Ulterian skies, as we see Vader's TIE advance, followed by two wingmen.
I have that destination, Lord Vader, a man-made pleasure satellite, the Wheel.
Then, Wormus, it becomes our destination as well. Many people will want to criticize Marvel for writing an Imperial officer talking to Vader that way. After all, isn't that so out of character? Not really if you think about it, though. This was before The Empire Strikes Back, where Vader was written as someone everyone feared. In the first movie, everyone talked down to him. Remember the holding her is dangerous guy? Or Mahdi? Or Tarkin? Even Leia? Even so, the exchange is funny, especially considering someone actually calling Vader dear and his reaction to it. The stormtrooper helmets in the first panel, where Vader's talking to Wormus. I'm not sure about that. We sure have had the TIE Advance fighter overused in this arc, but I have no issues when Vader is the one flying it. I just don't think it should be this mass-produced thing that all the TIE people are flying. We cut back to the Wheel, where Master Calm, a character who I still hate, informs Greyshade that Leia has escaped. Greyshade is not pleased.
I fear I wasn't with her, sir, since the doors were sealed, and your own handpicked guards were on security duty. There seemed no reason.
I sent those men on a special assignment.
That data wasn't processed through me, sir. Wheel policy requires...
I'm administrator, Master Calm. I can make, break, or bend wheel policy. Now, what were you doing that was so vital?
Continuing my study of the princess's two droids, 3PO and R2-D2, I didn't authorize any such study. You're in rebellion. I don't believe so, Senator. I did solicit permission, perhaps a bit vaguely, but you didn't deny it, so technically my own master computer is devoting himself to rebel droids. At the risk of impertinence, sir, aren't you doing the same with Princess Leia, a rebel leader? Obviously, your actions are connected to the human emotion of love, while some chord is struck in my own circuitry by the mutual respect and friendship between the rebel droids and their master. And here we go again with this garbage. Robots and humans are friends! Robots have feelings! How deep! Master Calm then proceeds to tell Greyshade that he wants him to be his human friend. Greyshade has to sit on this thought, though, as Strom comes in for his appearance this issue. Aboard Strom's Star Destroyer, some of Greyshade's men have recovered the stolen wheel funds, which were last issue and last podcast. The story behind it is there. Which proves that the Empire staged this whole event so they can take over the wheel. Because most of the crew is in on shore leave, quote-unquote, at the wheel, Greyshade's men were easily able to pick off the skeleton crew. Leia and Luke and the droids have observed and recorded this. They decide to follow Greyshade's men. What about Han? We haven't seen him or Chewie this issue yet. We do get a scene of Han preparing for his next fight in the big game. He considers taking the winnings he's had so far and quitting, but he's reminded that he still has other wheel fees to take care of, or he's going to be sent to the spice mines at Kessel. With no other choice, he enters the big battle, which it's in a dome that has a clear sky and anti-gravity or whatever, but because of it's a clear dome, it looks like they're spacewalking, which has been an obsession with Marvel Star Wars lately. Like the preliminary contest, it being fought within the large central sphere that forms the wheel's hub. Unlike the preliminary contest, it's being fought in zero gravity. As Han ponders to himself, Brute strength can't count for too much under these conditions. Maybe I've got a chance after all. I'll know better when I see the competition. They're letting in the other preliminary winners now so I can... Oh no! One of them is Chewie! Next issue, to the last gladiator. I think we all saw that twist coming issues ago. Another walking in space without spacesuit sequence. Oy, 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 oy. The letter page mentions that Chris Claremont, who wrote issue 17, would be doing an upcoming two-parter. I'm wondering if that story became Star Wars Annual 1 instead, because that was a Chris Claremont story. I learned from browsing the John Byrne forums, actually, that at one point when looking for a replacement for the Thomas Chaykin team, the team of John Byrne and Chris Claremont was briefly considered. Interesting. I wonder how that would have turned out. Here's a letter that I found interesting. I'm going to start in the middle of the letter, just for time's sake. Of course, if the demand is there, you could always start a parallel magazine entitled Before Star Wars, in which we are told the adventures of Luke, Vader, R2-D2, Chewie, etc., prior to the events that occurred in the motion picture. Stories such as the deaths of Luke's father, the get-together of the two droids, Vader's turn to evil, and countless other earlier adventures could be told. The man was there for an extra Spidey magazine, so it should be there for an additional Star Wars 2. No team-ups with Marvel regulars. Even though team-up magazines and guest stars are my absolute favorite in the world of comics, they show that all the present-time Marvel heroes live in the same universe with each other. Star Wars is not in the same universe. Star Wars is, no offense intended to you, not an original Marvel concept, in any sense that Spidey, Thor, the Fantastic Four, and the others are. You won't be seeing Spider-Man in the movie Star Wars 2, so I don't feel Vader, Solo, and company should be mixing it up with the Marvel regulars in the comic book either. And Marvel responds, even if most of the bullpen staff was in an already complete agreement with you about the latter, Mark, copyright complications alone would probably prevent any fusing of that galaxy which exists a long time ago and far, far away with the Marvel Universe. Your other suggestions are pretty interesting, and it seems especially prophetic that you would mention an Obi-Wan Kenobi flashback story in about 8 issues or so. If all goes as scheduled, and as you may have noticed, once in a while, or maybe even more often, they don't, Star Wars 24, which is 7 issues, will have just such a tale, written by Marvel assistant editor and longtime Star Wars buff Joe Duffy. But not all fill-in issues will be flashback stories. Some that we have planned are new adventures, but focusing on one or two of the Star Warriors rather than the entire cast. And we also hope to come up with something completely unexpected every now and then, just to keep you on your toes.
I wonder what that letter writer thought of the prequels. A prequel magazine would have been interesting, but at this point, it would have had so many continuity errors, it would have been hilarious. Spider-Man teaming up with Luke and company would have been hilariously bad as well. I'm glad that they didn't do it, but I can sit up for hours pondering how funnily awesome that would have been. It would have been Star Wars Holiday Special levels of fail slash awesome. Sorry that it's been so long, guys. Hopefully we'll get another episode to you guys soon. Don't forget to check out my Facebook page, Marvel Star Wars. Check out the blog at StarWarsMarvel.com. I plan on revamping it sometime in the next month or so. You can find me at Star Wars Celebration in Orlando this August, so if you're showing up, drop me a line. I'll also be at San Diego Comic-Con. Next issue will be The Last Gladiator. I'll see y'all then.